Joe Palcom reports.
The Mauna Loa volcano is on the Big Island in Hawaii. Once you turn off the highway, it's a 16-mile drive on a road that climbs through an undulating field of nothing but rocks and boulders made from lava. When you reach 11,000 feet, you come upon a cluster of small buildings belonging to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. One of them has a plaque next to the door. I'm about to walk into the Keeling Building, named in honor of Professor Charles David Keeling, Scripps Institution of Oceanography, who initiated continuous CO2 measurements at this site in 1958. Inside, there are a bunch of computers and other electronic instruments humming away. In a corner of the room, NOAA atmospheric scientist Aidan Colton is closing off an airline he's just used to fill a glass flask.
We sample 24 hours a day on most of our instrumentation, but what we're most interested in is actually the extremely clean air coming down from the troposphere that's been well mixed, traveling over 2,000 miles in every direction to get here.
The troposphere is where the bulk of Earth's atmosphere resides. It's the buildup of carbon dioxide in the troposphere that has climate scientists concerned. Colton takes me outside and points to what looks like a tall antenna tower with several cables attached to it.
It's basically strapped down on all sides so that it doesn't blow away.
Get windy up here?
Yeah, it gets very windy at times. You know, we can get winds in excess of 50 miles per hour.
The air Colton analyzes comes from intake ports at the top of the 120-foot tower. Across a small parking lot from the Keeling Building is the main observatory building. Inside, there are offices, a pantry, and several laboratory rooms.
So this is the CO2 room?
Yeah, we call this the carbon cycle room. So we have a CO2 analyzer, a methane analyzer, and a carbon monoxide analyzer.
Colton sits down at a laptop next to the CO2 analyzer.
On our screen right now, we're seeing hourly values of CO2. And the last hourly value was 399.33, and, you know, early in the day we had a 400.46.
Just to be clear here, the hourly number isn't the headline. It's the daily average that's crossed 400 that's making news. Colton says daily averages are interesting, but they don't tell the whole story.
We're a long-term baseline monitoring station, so we're not interested in what happens hour to hour, day to day, even week to week.
Far more important is the long-term trend.
We don't expect CO2 as a monthly average to reach 400 until probably May of 2014.
But no matter what day or week or month you choose to say CO2 exceeded 400 parts per million in the atmosphere, the long-term trends show that the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is continuing to climb, something scientists say remains a major concern. Joe Palca, NPR News.
YouTube has never met a cover song it didn't like, but making money from one has always been a different story. That may be changing. New companies are bringing together YouTube cover song stars with major record labels to cut a revenue-sharing deal that lets everyone get a piece of the action. Turnstile News reporter Noah Nelson explores how the biz model works.
If you've listened to the radio in the last year, you may have heard this.
I'm at a payphone trying to call home all of my change I spent on you.
That's Maroon 5's payphone. If you look the song up on YouTube, you'll find it. You'll also find...
Where are the plans we made for two?
And... And
all those fairy tales I never miss. One more stupid love song, I'll be sick.
That last version is by Tyler Ward, a 24-year-old singer and songwriter from Denver with an all-American look and a sound that lives somewhere between indie pop and country. Ward uses YouTube to promote his music career.
I started actually doing cover songs in the bar, trying to make ends meet every weekend. So when I figured out what YouTube was, I was like, I could just put these online, see what happens.
What happened was an opening slot for the Jonas Brothers, a performance on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, and a headlining tour through Europe, the U.S., and Canada. Before that, Ward posted covers on YouTube, hoping to draw new fans. Yet he could have made more money back at the bar singing those songs.
The challenge is, when an artist decides to cover a song, they don't actually have the rights to make money on that song. They are not allowed to run advertisements and not allowed to make money.
That's George Strompolis. He's the CEO of a company called Fullscreen Entertainment. Tyler Ward is one of his clients. He explains that since YouTube is free in the same way that broadcast TV is free, the site makes money through advertising that runs with the videos. Until recently, cover songs were the exception. YouTube couldn't run ads with those videos. An aspiring musician like Ward could put hours of work into a video, hoping for attention, but not get a single dollar.
The problem is also neither will the original songwriter, because again, there are no advertisements.
The issue is the legal rights to the song. Those are held by publishers or songwriters, and if anyone wants to make money on a recording of a song, they have to make a deal. Enter Fullscreen and one of its rivals, Maker Studios. They're in the business of connecting YouTube creators with possible advertisers. These companies put talent agents, video producers, and ad sales all under one roof. Earlier this year, Fullscreen and Maker struck a deal with one of the largest song rights holders, Universal Music Publishing Group. This opened up Universal's massive catalog, decades of music from Fleetwood Mac to Adele, to a revenue-sharing plan. Now the musicians who work with Fullscreen and Maker can earn money on their cover videos.
What we've done in teaming up with Universal Music Publishing Group is allowed the artists who cover those songs to have the license to run the advertisements. And that way, if their cover song on YouTube gets hundreds of thousands or millions of views, it's actually worth some money to that cover artist, and the original songwriter is also compensated.
YouTube pays the music publisher and original songwriter, and the young cover artists also get a little money. They also get to make names for themselves while riding the popularity wave of hit songs. Meanwhile, businesses like Fullscreen and Maker Studios are in a way becoming de facto A&R departments for the music industry. Maker recently got a $36 million injection of cash from Time Warner Investments as YouTube has become an entertainment destination. Courtney Holt is the chief operating officer of Maker Studios. Before coming to Maker, Holt was with MySpace Music. A serious music fan, Holt believes that there are infinite possibilities here to mine the back catalogs of the music publishers. The YouTube generation, after all, hasn't heard everything yet.
I think in some ways we have a responsibility to reintroduce this generation to really great music, not just new music. If we have one talent that loves Justin Timberlake, maybe they haven't really discovered the Michael Jackson catalog or the Motown catalog, and you start to think about, what if I go back a little further? What am I going to find?
What musicians are finding is that cover songs can simultaneously launch their YouTube careers while helping to, well, cover the bills. No more spending your post-college years singing in bars while living in your father's basement, like Tyler Ward did.
He was like, you got 2 years, son. You got 2 years, and then you're going to have to get a real job. I said, all right. So about a year and a half later, started doing the cover thing, and my whole world changed. And I was able to move out to L.A., support myself, buy a car, buy a house, that kind of thing.
Music to any aspiring musician's ears. For NPR News, I'm Noah Nelson.
Support for WILL comes from CDH Proton Center, a ProCure center providing the community with proton therapy, a cancer radiation treatment that pinpoints the tumor and seeks to minimize potential side effects and the risk of secondary tumors. More at ProCure.com.
Grand plans to rescue Detroit's economy have come and gone. Now some local entrepreneurs are thinking small. They're filling an empty warehouse with startup businesses.
I feel like we can make a difference with what we're doing here, whereas if we lived in Portland or Brooklyn, we'd just be another face in the crowd.
A small-scale comeback for Detroit. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 13th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Daphne du Maurier, born in London, 1907, spent most of her adult life in Cornwall, where her three most famous novels are set, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek, and Rebecca. It was on this day in 1373 the mystic Julian of Norwich received the last of her divine visions. She was 31 years old. She was a female hermit, an anchoress, lived alone, not in a community, as a nun. It was a dramatic time in England in the late 14th century. The Black Death had killed at least a third of the population. There was famine, crop failures. The Catholic Church was falling apart. England was at war with France. And Julian of Norwich decided to withdraw from society for a life of religious solitude. She became seriously ill. She was near death. And then suddenly she began experiencing visions. She had 16 visions of God, and she was healed. These visions went into her book, Revelations of Divine Love, one of the first books written by a woman in English. She wrote, "So I understood our sensuality is founded in nature, in mercy, and in grace. And this foundation enables us to receive gifts which lead us to endless life. For I saw very surely that our substance is in God, and I also saw that God is in our sensuality. For God is never out of the soul, in which he will dwell blessedly without end." It was on this day in 1940 Winston Churchill gave his first speech as Prime Minister to the House of Commons. He'd taken over as Prime Minister 3 days earlier. He gave the speech in which he said, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, it is victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory, however long and hard the road may be. For without victory, there is no survival." And it was on this day in 1958 that Velcro was patented by a Swiss electrical engineer, Georges de Mestral, based on his observation of the thistly plant burdock and the spiny seeds or burrs that latch onto anything. The word Velcro combined the French word velour, meaning velvet, and crochet, meaning hook. Here's a poem for today by William Matthews, "Iowa City to Boulder." I take most of the drive by night. It's cool, and in the dark, my lapsed inspection can't be seen. I sing and make myself promises. By dawn on the high plains, I'm driving tired and cagey, red-winged blackbirds on the mileposts like candle flames flare their wings for balance in the blasts of truck wakes. The dust of not sleeping drifts in my mouth, and 5 or 6 miles slur by uncounted. I say I hate long-distance drives, but I love them. The flat light stains the foothills pale, and I speed up the canyon to sleep until the little lull the insects take at dusk before they say their names all night in the loud field.